You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Sharon Arnold. Sharon, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Sharon, so you're in Seattle, and we're going to talk about what you've been working with, which is Bridge Productions, right? Can you tell me a little bit about or define Bridge Productions and your role there?
Yeah, so Bridge Productions started in 2011 as an online gallery and a curated box sets. So what these were, they were handmade wooden boxes containing original artworks by two different artists paired with a literary publication. That was towards the end of tethering communities together, kind of bringing together communities that I didn't really see talking to each other, and also it was a way to sort of foster patronage at a time when a lot of galleries were closing in Seattle. So eventually that
let me stop you for a minute right there, because I just want to ask a little bit about that. So the handmade wooden box contains two original artworks, and when you say it was paired with a literary publication, is that a publication that already exists, that was published?
Sometimes authors would submit work that they'd already published elsewhere, and we would make like a little booklet. Sometimes writers would come up with an entirely new project, and we would also create a booklet. Sometimes writers like to create a visual piece, so then it would be a third artwork, kind of like a bonus. But always pairing visual artists with writers was sort of the goal. Occasionally, writers would want to contextualize the visual art in a critical or historical way. Sometimes writers would create a work of fiction. It was really wide open.
Okay, and before we talk about the brick and mortar space, just to understand a little bit about what you meant by patronage. So this is a box, two artworks, and a literary publication. You don't have a space yet. Is this, by patronage, you mean these were editions and then were sold?
Yeah. So we would release, in the very beginning days, like the first couple of years, we would release 20 editions. I would encourage artists to make 20 different pieces so that people would each get something unique. Sometimes, if I was working with a printmaker, obviously that would be an actual edition set of works. And so the confinement of the box was 9 by 12 by 2 inches. So people got very creative, especially sculptors. We would have events, pop-up events at other gallery spaces in Seattle, and we would invite the public to come, and people would come and purchase the box sets. And it was a way for me to introduce artists to collectors, to get people new to collecting, excited about the idea. These were very affordable. I think they started in the very beginning, it was $200. By the end of last year, we'd raised the price to $450. That was over like 5 years.
And that's exciting. So in a sense, these are almost like books, right? It almost feels like a book.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I think that I took a lot of cues from publishing, or I'm always thinking about how the music industry is really creative with packaging and, you know, DIY projects. And I was thinking about volume sets that bands release with different types of media. It just looked something that could be held in your hand. You know, we're asked to look at art in this sort of like religious way where we're distanced and we can't touch it. We can only look at it. This sort of allows people, invites people to engage with the art, touch it, go through the pieces, really, really be involved with it on a very intimate level.
I agree. I love that. And so the next step, you a little bit later, which I think we're in 2012, right? You had your brick and mortar location. That's what it evolved
into. Yeah. We started with a big group show of all the artists and writers who had been involved with the project so far, and then we just went right into a regular exhibition schedule, just like a gallery. So I've been doing that ever since. It's been really great. This past year is the first year that I haven't offered the box sets, because I'm hoping to, you know, everything is an evolution, right? So you're always kind of trying to find the ways that make the work most relevant, and most approachable to people. So that's what I'm doing right now. But I continue to run the space.
So let's talk about that space. So that space is still running. You've been doing the editions, and this is what you do full time. I know you've also been an artist. You come from the kind of aesthetic of an artist, so this is really also an artist-run space, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. You know, I really try to work with a broad range of artists. I really also love, a big part of my programming is hosting guest curators. So I have this platform in a city that doesn't have many venues. And so it's really lovely to hand the space over to guest curators, especially for people whose voices I can't properly represent in terms of marginalized communities, indigenous, black voices. So it's been a really great thing to hand over to other folks. And that means that I do a lot of things with partnerships and sometimes pop-ups. I collaborated with an architectural firm last year to launch shows. I represent 6 artists like a commercial gallery, but I really don't ever refer to myself as a dealer because I feel like I put such an emphasis on collaboration and experimentation. And I don't feel that I'm very good at focusing on saleability, but I really just want to put the art and artists forward. And then
well,
right
that, now, that's what I was going to ask because it does sound like, yeah, I want to talk about what's happening right now, but it does sound like a mix between a nonprofit space and a commercial space with the way you're approaching things. Having said that, especially the sustaining new patronage, the curatorial residencies that you're talking about, and the artists that you're working with. Is the space entirely self-funded, or do you also receive funding from other sources? Is that part of how it functions, or does it sustain itself through sales?
Most of the funding comes from the gallery sales, and sometimes I do get support from longstanding patrons that I've had, which is really lovely. But I think for the most part, Bridge Productions is a self-sustaining business. I do want people to feel comfortable buying work. I do want to create an atmosphere that encourages people to buy work. I feel like if I have to thrive beneath capitalism, I'm going to have to use it to my best advantage, right, and to the best advantage of the artists. But it isn't quite the same as a commercial gallery that really focuses on like the commercialization and the product, right? The commodity. That's hard for me, probably because I come from an artist background, maybe because I'm a little bit too much of a philosopher, maybe because I'm so much more interested in ideas. I guess that's my biggest challenge, but it's nice to know that at least the business pays for itself so it can keep going for sure.
That is nice to know. So you were also about to tell me what's happening right now. Shows that are up now, I think before I stopped and made you talk about that dynamic between commercial and non-commercial space, you said there was something coming up or happening right now.
Right, so right now, this began in March. I've given the space over to Negara A. Kadumu for the curatorial residency. And she is bringing in artist Mike Wagner, who's a beloved painter here in Seattle. And she's using the space for writing and research in the same way that an artist would, right? So this is exactly what it sounds like. It's a residency where the curator comes and spends time. I was interested, because I have guest curators so often, I was interested in what happens when you give a curator more time in the space to live with it the way that I do, because I know my familiarity and my intimacy with those walls shifts the way I hang work, the work that I select, and so on. It really informs the way I design a show or who I bring in for a show. So I thought it would be really cool to do that, because normally when you're independently curating, you get a floor plan, you get a site visit, but it's all very abstract, right? You're not really having this dialogue with the space. So she is. So the public-facing part of the project right now is her writing. She's released one essay. She'll release another. And then the show that she's curating will open on June 8th. And that will be a solo exhibition of Mike Wagner's paintings.
I love that. It's very exciting and dynamic the way you're bringing in other curators, and so those other curators come in and they're bringing in artists. And Mike Wagner's work is also for sale, of course, and benefits the gallery in the same way other artists would.
Actually, I think we're going to remove the commercial aspect of this exhibition and just present the works. And that was after some talking with Nagara about what her vision for the show was, and also her own personal purpose for the exhibition was to really just put the work forward and not have it be a commercial exhibition. So in this case, the works won't be for sale. Of course, if anybody was interested in buying the works, we would send them straight to Mike. Like, yeah, go get it. Absolutely.
So, you know, maybe we should talk a little bit about your philosophy towards all of this, because, you know, I love that example. I love what you're doing there. At the same time, it's also antithetical to a commercial space, right? That whole show, there will be no sales, and you have a curator in there that you're also supporting to some extent to be in there. So how does that get balanced out with everything else? That sounds like a sacrifice you're making there. At the same time, it's part of the programming of the space, right? It's part of what you want to show and the dialogue you want to have with the public. So that's a very unusual and interesting space to be in. It sounds like an artist-run type space, but also, you know, you're obviously doing something pretty unique with these residencies. Is that part of your philosophy? Is that what's happening there? You know, because that's such an unusual mix.
Yeah. My philosophy is really to motivate art and artist careers and curators through collaborations. And my job is to find a way to sustain it and support it. And I don't really mind that hustle. You know, I feel like we're in a time of great flexibility if we take advantage of it, that we don't have, none of the prescribed methods of running a space are working. And I'm sort of seeing all of these different parts of the ecosystem flexing and bending and shifting and figuring out what their place is. They realize like all these places work together, right? That the established commercial gallery serves as important a function as, you know, my neighbors, the Alice Gallery, who are a curator-run collaborative, as important as the artist-run space that's happening in someone's garage or a moving van, right? And so it's sort of interesting to kind of pull all of these different things from the ecosystem together under one space and find the ways that to make that work and see all the different people I can reach through different kinds of programming. Because I think, you know, if I'm rigid, if I only have one path to the art, then it's going to really narrow my audience, or it's going to leave out a bunch of people is really what I'm getting at. If I have all these different kinds of events and I have all this different kind of programming, then something will appeal to someone, and then I get to bring in more people and engage more people and create more paths of access. Because I think ultimately my philosophy is about paths of access. How do I get people excited? How do I create a space where people feel safe and included? How do I get people to feel comfortable talking about art? You know, it's just about inclusion, I guess, ultimately.
I love that. And of course, it's also about paying the bills, though, which is the hustle you're talking about that you don't
always
mind, right?
And the
hustle is, does that extend beyond the gallery? Are there other jobs you work or do?
Or
this is
hustle.
Your entire focus?
Hustling is the background program, right? It's the operating system. I feel like, you know, when I'm not in the space, well, yeah, every place I go, I'm a representative, right? So, you know, I'm always working to sell work. Bridge Productions has an artsy page. You know, I'm going through all of those motions too. But then, personally, yeah, I've got to have a paycheck. So I do a lot of freelance writing. I do some ghost writing. I do supportive writing for artists, which means that I'm a consult for artist statements, bios, websites, all that. And then I'm also, this year I started teaching at Cornish College of the Arts, which has been so rewarding. That's been probably the most exciting thing I've been doing all year.
And why is that? Let's talk a little bit about that. So, because, you know, that sounds like it's something new, and And I appreciate you telling me different aspects of the hustle, which also makes sense as a writer too, or at least that's part of what you're doing in presenting things. To me, it seems that so often the way certain kinds of artists run galleries, and maybe I shouldn't always say artists run galleries, but projects that are in, as you were saying before, garages or apartments, can often take flight through the writing that's done about it, so people understand what's going on.
Totally, yeah. I think sometimes writing is people's first entry in, and I know Seattle is not alone in suffering a lack of platforms that, you know, art departments and sections of publications are getting slashed everywhere. So, you know, I think that's an ongoing conversation. But, you know, when you're working with students, you have the opportunity to kind of be reinvigorated about what you do through them, because, you know, they're just stepping in. So you kind of have to step back and go, oh no, I want these folks to be excited so that we all have a reason to keep going, right? That each one of these people are future ambassadors, right, and future colleagues too. So sort of being able to say, oh, you know, here's some tools, here's some resources, here's what's possible. You know, I left my seniors on a really positive note talking about arts ecosystems, right? All of the different moving parts that we were talking about earlier, you and I, that they have so many opportunities to start space, start writing, you know, broaden the audience, all of that.
That's so interesting. So to talk a little bit more about that, because that's a wonderful thing, of course, to teach students, and certainly in my mind that there's the idea of which seems so typical and kind of boring of a college to graduate students who are just thinking of getting into the gallery system and doing that, but the idea that there are so many modes of this ecosystem as you're talking about, including the ways you're working and other iterations of that, is that something that you're teaching specifically in the class in terms of engagement or I don't know what you would call that, like what is your class that you're teaching?
The class is mostly geared towards exhibition practices. In the fall semester, it's juniors and seniors, but in the spring semester, it's really focused on seniors and their final BFA exhibition, which at Cornish is a huge production. It's a real live show. It's open to the public, and you know they've got to work from the ground up with real deadlines that are not. You know, I tell them at the beginning of the semester, you know, these are not assignments; these are real world deadlines. And so they really get that experience of the final months leading up to a show, which I think it's a great crash course, right? But it's really hard for me to just say, okay, write your artist statement, write your bio, get your website ready, all that. Like, I think all these other things tie into the reasons why. So they need to, you know, all the reasons why. They need to contextualize why this is important, why they're doing this, like what's possible, what comes after. And I think, you know, it's really easy for students to say, oh God, you know, I got to graduate, I got to go get a gallery, I got to like try to get an article written about me. And it's like, you know, none of us are probably really going to get that in 2018. So here's how you can go out and get it or start it or do it or provide it for someone else.
And very much so because that's interesting, because in one hand they're preparing for this show and they do have to have an artist statement and a bio and a website. But you're saying at the same time, and just correct me if I'm not quite understanding, but at the same time this is their launch into the world, and so part of what they can do is also, instead of looking for that break or seeking a gallery, which might be, you know, somewhat similar to even their final exhibit there, that they can or should be thinking of alternate ways to get the work out of there and support themselves, whether it is through, as we were saying, apartment shows or mobile shows and trucks or starting your own gallery or something like that. Is that what you're saying to them?
Absolutely. Because I think it gives you more hope and more optimism to say, oh, there's more than one path, right? I don't have to do it this one way. There are like 10 or 15 or 100 other ways to do it.
That's exciting. I'm glad you're teaching that. I think that's something that students don't hear very often, because, I mean, partly, I mean, or in large part that's informed, obviously, by your experience, which most teachers don't have. Most teachers are trying to get their work into a gallery one day and or something like that. So,
I'll admit that. It's true. This is how I started. So I feel like maybe that absolutely informs what I'm trying to share, that maybe I was restless or impatient or didn't believe that I would get that, that would happen for me. So I just started stuff. But I think most exciting things are that.
I think so too. I mean, I think of, I interviewed Michelle Grafner a while ago, who of course did the Suburban, and that was a 10-by-10-foot cinder block garage on the, in the suburbs of Chicago, a very unlikely venue, you would think, for artists. And I remember she told me how even naive she was doing it, asking major artists like David Reed, do you want to do a show there? And, you know, she said, really, that was a bit much to ask, but, you know, remarkably, they did it. And and it was her writing, like yours, that also got all that out into the world and gave her so much attention as well as a curator.
Exactly. And it really models what's possible. And I think also it's a indicator of what's needed. You know, now, I don't know if anybody can wear just one hat anymore. The people who do, I think, are very fortunate, but I'm not really sure that's the world we live in anymore. So then there's a cautionary tale too, like how much can you do and where do you draw the line? You know, you have to know what you're able to give, I think, is critical.
Yeah, I think that's a very important point. It's wonderful talking to you about this. Before I ask you a last question, is there anything else you want to say about this process or show coming up or anything you want to plug before I ask that last question?
No, I'm really excited about Bridge Productions and the future, and it's gone through many iterations and it may go through many more. And I guess what's on my mind right now are all the different ways exhibition spaces shape and shift and change. And I hope people check it out. You know, we've got a lot of good shows lined up for the end of the year.
Wonderful. So tell me what you're reading at the moment. That's the question that you know I ask everyone.
Well, I'm reading a lot. Maura Riley just released Curatorial Activism Toward an Ethics of Curating. So I just got that in the mail. I'm really excited. I've been brushing up on my post-internet knowledge. So I've been reading Contemporary Art and Digital Culture by Melissa Gronlund, which is really wonderful. I mean, she gets into everything, identity, consumerism, capitalism, all of our favorite topics.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, likewise.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.